All right, guys, I just wanted one thing. Before we start all of our shows, I want to be able to say this so you guys understand. I am not a psychiatrist. I am not a psychologist. I am just an infantry marine who is trying to help my friends. So long story short, if anything we say gets you in a place mentally where you need some help immediately, the Veterans Crisis Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. And what I want you to do is call them. If you have anything that is making you overwhelmed in one of these programs, if something in here triggers you, again, 1-800-273-8255. And if you're a veteran, press the number 1 and you'll get immediate help. They will try to get you into contact with somebody who can help you immediately if they cannot help you immediately. So that's all I wanted to say, and then let's get on with the show. Hey, welcome to Post Combat Normal. This is your host again, Joe Morgan. Dr. Melinda Keenan and Dr. Robert Schneider. Welcome to the program again, guys.
Thanks, Joe. Hi.
How's everything going down at the Vet Center today?
Oh, it's fairly brisk.
All right, well, let's jump right into it today. I know you guys are on a tight schedule. So today we're going to be covering nightmares. What else? What else? Nightmares and what?
Yeah, nightmares and sleep disturbance, but I focus on post-traumatic stress-related nightmares.
Okay. All right. Well, kick it off. What do you got to say?
Okay. Well, in general, we kind of wanted to lay it out in terms of the following structure. I want to initially just give some information about the way nightmares typically manifest in the overall syndrome of post-traumatic stress, particularly the way they develop and the way they their course over time. And I want to talk a little bit about common content of related nightmares, how the nightmares associated with post-traumatic stress differ from everyday nightmares of people who haven't been traumatized. And I want to talk briefly about ways to manage nightmares if they're really becoming a major problem that's interfering with functioning. But then lastly, we want to switch tracks completely and talk about what nightmares can teach us, how even though they're a very painful symptom, they sometimes can contain invaluable information guiding a person toward where they want to put their energies in the healing and the treatment.
Okay. Perfect. Sounds good.
Okay, so first of all, the first thing I want to say is that a very high percentage of vets with a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress, 75 to 95%, depending on the study, report nightmares to be among their most distressing symptoms. Nightmares are intensely vivid. They are one of the many ways that a trauma intrudes upon a person's current awareness. They're in the intrusion or re-experiencing cluster. So when nightmares strike, it is as if the trauma is happening all over again. If a person's asleep, their brain, when a nightmare comes, their brain does not know the difference between a dream and the trauma actually occurring. So the very same sequence of brain and body processes occur as if the trauma were happening all over again. So they are Technicolor, Dolby sound, multi-sensory horror shows. And people who suffer from regular nightmares develop various ways of avoiding sleep. I mean, if you think about it, for those of us who don't have to carry around the weight of PTS, no matter how crappy our day has been, you know, we can always look forward to tumbling into bed, going to sleep, and pulling the covers over our head, so to speak, getting some relief. But for a person with post-traumatic stress, going to sleep often brings on the worst moments of the day in the form of the horror show of nightmares. So it's a very big deal. It's why we've selected this topic for particular emphasis in the overall podcast series. The other thing I want to say up front about nightmares is that they are often They often lie at the hub of a whole bunch of other symptoms. They often cause a cascade or series of other symptoms to occur or get worse. So, you know, if you're suffering from chronic nightmares, you're obviously suffering from chronic sleep disturbance, probably sleep avoidance, and those issues in turn cause problems with irritability, depression, concentration, memory problems, and eventually health problems because, you know, restful, restorative sleep is crucial for the body and for the brain. When we are in deep sleep and REM, rapid eye movement sleep, where a lot of dreaming occurs, our brains manufacture all kinds of vital chemicals, neurotransmitters, you know, serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, the chemical messengers that allow us to think clearly and keep our mood decent. But it's also where we manufacture immune system elements like T cells and macrophages and all the things that fight illness. So a person who's chronically sleep deprived is prone to various kinds of illness. And then finally, you know, when we're sleep deprived, our bodies go into fat storage mode, release a lot of stress hormones. So chronic sleep disturbance can cause obesity, hypertension, the whole gamut of medical problems associated with post-traumatic stress. So, you know, we're not pill pushers. We want to deal with nightmares, you know, as psychologists here. But if a person is suffering from severe nightmares and sleep disturbance, that's the one area where I will often urge a vet to talk to an MD about possibly at least a short-term sleeping pill to help them get a little bit better rest. So they're a very big deal as a symptom, nightmares are.
And I'll actually add one thing to that. Also, always double check with all of your meds that that's not a side effect, because one of the things that happened to me was one of the medications that was prescribed to me, it made nightmares more vivid. So it's a good thing to ask whenever you're telling somebody, you know, whatever other symptoms you have, whatever other physical ailments you have, double check that that's not a symptom, because for a combat vet, I'd rather have the flu than have more nightmares. I'd rather have whatever I have in most cases than have them become more vivid. So, sorry, continue.
Yeah. That's a great point, Joe. A lot of medicines can cause that problem.
What's a macrophage?
It is an immune system antibody that will attack various kinds of invasive organisms. And it's kind of like a big cloud that swallows up follows up the invaders and chokes them out. Thank you, Dr. King, for asking. Joe, nightmares development and course in PTSD. Often they will be most intense and vivid in the first few months or years after a period, after trauma, so after, say, a deployment. This is a general sort of, you know, statement because everybody's symptoms vary, but what we hear a lot is that the nightmares maybe were worse in the past and they've eased down a little bit. But the thing about them is, just like all PTSD symptoms, they're always vulnerable to triggering. So, you know, for Vietnam vets, maybe the nightmares were worse in the 70s, you know, and eased down a little bit. But then along comes 9/11 and the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and, you know, retirement, medical issues. And so, you know, they can always flare up unpredictably, and then especially when a person's, this is really important for people to know, when you start, you know, some kind of decisive trauma-focused therapy like our program offers, unfortunately on the front end of that you can expect some symptom intensification for a while, and sleep difficulty and nightmares are often among the first symptoms to really ramp up when you start to face your trauma, because you know, you're kicking a hornet's nest, and so material that's been buried has been buried for a reason. And once we start to deliberately try to bring it to light, you can pretty well count on nightmares flaring up for a while.
Well, and what you guys said in the class was, like any wound, when you clean it out, it hurts a little bit, and then, you know, and then you bandage it up. Well, the trauma therapy is exactly that. It's cleaning out that wound. So, of course, it's going to get worse a little bit. But guys listening, please understand it does get better. It just takes a little bit of time, and like any wound, it'll heal. It just has to heal through a little bit of pain. So,
absolutely. That's a good analogy, Joe. So in terms of the content of nightmares, about roughly half of nightmares, according to studies, about half of nightmares are basically a direct replaying of the trauma. It's like you just hit replay on the tape and play it, and often that's just the same thing over and over again. It's very normal to have a single or a small set of recurring nightmares, and sometimes they'll just play from beginning to end and then hit repeat. And so those are the ones where, you know, again, the brain cannot really tell that it's a dream. And so, you know, the same, fight or flight stuff will happen during the nightmare as if the trauma occurred. And so for that reason, it can cause a hell of a lot of disruption for the person. And if they're with a significant other, if they're married, for instance, it can wreak havoc on sleeping arrangements. A lot of our vets will thrash around, yell. Some have very guiltily, told us, I woke up choking my wife. And they feel like, this is awful. They feel terrible about it, but we always explain to them it's not obviously something you're intending to do. You just are attacking whatever, combatant you're facing in your nightmare, and unfortunately sometimes that's the spouse sleeping next to you. I had one guy had to throw out his mattress. It was so soaked in sweat that it became moldy. Spouses will tell us they have to wake up their veteran with a broomstick or, calling from across the room. And a whole large number of spouses and significant others sleep in separate rooms. It's just too much thrashing around. So that is not unusual at all. Waking up soaked in sweat is probably the most common one of those. And it's also, a person may be having nightmares, more or less all the time and not remember any of it. It's very normal not to be able to remember the plot of the dream, or maybe it's just a vague recollection of the feeling associated with the dream. But just because you can't remember it when you wake up doesn't mean you're not having it. The awakening from nightmares can be so abrupt. Nightmares can happen at different sleep stages, and so memory gets totally disrupted. And it's important just to say this bluntly: everybody dreams. A lot of our vets say, I don't think I have dreams. Well, no, that's not true. You just don't remember them. But if you're waking up sweaty and the bed is in disarray and you've been hollering, you can pretty well bet that you've been having a nightmare. Now, the other, as I said, about half of content of nightmares is the trauma or traumas themselves just replaying. The other half of the time, there's some kind of weird modification to the plot of the dream. It might not be a direct reenactment, but trauma-related themes and feelings are very common. So, the feelings being typically terror and or rage. The events that occur in dreams are almost always something like some form of helplessness, like being chased or attacked and not being able to get away or not being able to fight back. Classic example, trying to punch, and it's like you're punching in underwater so that you can't get a crisp blow to be delivered. Trying to fire a weapon and either it jams, or one that Dr. Keene and I have been hearing a lot lately in our groups is guys are trying to fire a weapon, and no matter how hard they pull, they just can't get the trigger to engage and the weapon to fire. So, if you think about what we've talked about before in terms of PTS, one of the cardinal features of trauma is helplessness to bring about the outcome that you want, helplessness to stop something bad from happening or to do something that needs to happen. And so in terms of nightmares replaying that, the plot of the dream expresses that in some form or fashion of helplessness to either fight back or get away. Powerlessness, being trapped, being chased, being cornered, and a sense of doom. These are feelings that occur during the nightmare. And again, even if the person doesn't remember it, those emotions can leave kind of an emotional hangover. And so a very severe nightmare can kind of color a whole person's day, kind of darken your day and be preoccupying. One particular thing that troubles a lot of our vets is the weird way that nightmares mix up time and place. So now and then and here and there get mixed up. Two types of ways this can occur. I want to give you a couple examples. One was a guy I worked with at the VA down in the Bay Area. He was a really well-established, well-respected substance abuse counselor. He'd worked for a couple of decades with veterans down there. And one day he wasn't at work, and turned out he didn't come back for a while. And when I finally figured out talked to him and find out what was going on, he had started to have a nightmare that was so bad that it made it impossible for him to come to work. He was dreaming that he was showing up to work at the VA, as usual, but in the hallway were booby traps that were set up by Viet Cong, and they were springing ambushes on him as he was trying to walk to his office. These nightmares were so vivid and had such an emotional hangover that it got to the point he would drive to work. This is when he's awake. He would drive to work and sit in the parking lot and look at the building and tell himself over and over, you know, it's 2005, there's no Viet Cong here, but it wasn't enough to trump the power of the emotional power of the dream. Unfortunately, it got so bad he couldn't overcome that. He finally had to retire. So that's where, you know, back then and over there intrudes during the nightmare on the here and now. The other way, which is probably even more common, is where a person will have a nightmare that they are back in the war zone, but suddenly loved ones, family members are present in the scenario where the trauma is about to happen. So say an Iraq vet who is driving, you know, down a road is dreaming about that event, but they look over and sitting next to them in their Humvee is their wife and children. And these tend to be extremely upsetting to vets. We're always guessing when we're interpreting dreams, but my take on it is this dream kind of represents their guilt, their distress about how their PTSD is affecting their family. So the mind, you know, converts it in terms of the dream plot into, you know, literally being in the war zone. So those are very common and hallmark features of nightmares, a kind of a free mixing up of time and place.
One of mine that is constant, and it doesn't matter where I am, but it's about control. It's about whether or not you're in any situation, and like you said, the weapon doesn't fire, or you're not able to stop something, and it's always the same where you're just powerless and you have to watch something. It doesn't matter the scenario, it's just the powerlessness. And, yeah. You know, sometimes it's actual combat and actual memories, and sometimes it's just – it can be with your kids, it can be with your wife, it can be anywhere, and you just have – you're just powerless to stop something, anything, whatever it is. And so it's not always the same dream, but a lot of times and I say a vet, I mean me, but any vet really that I've talked to – it's just the same feeling. It doesn't matter if it's the exact same scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. One other thing that has to do with transitioning from being asleep to awake. As we go to sleep at night, we have something called hypnagogic hallucinations. It's where, you know, the dream imagery is starting to kick in. We're still somewhat awake, but the dream is starting to happen. The same thing happens when we come out of a dream, and that's called a hypnopompic hallucination. And that tends to be really upsetting for vets because of the intensity and the multi-sensory nature of the dream imagery. So, you know, what you see in the dream, what you hear in the dream, and often what you smell in the dream will persist for sometimes a really remarkably long period of time after the person has awakened. So, you know, still hearing the sound of an explosion or smelling, you know, some sort of, let's say, a burning smell. You can be fully awake after a nightmare and you smell it just as if there's something actually on fire there in the room. One of the most dramatic examples I ever heard was a guy who was a Vietnam vet, and his buddy was killed. He stepped on a mine in Vietnam. And he had a nightmare about this, and he woke up, it was like 3 a.m. or something, he had to use the bathroom, he had to urinate, and he woke up and he swung his legs over the side of the bed and looked, and he swore, his bedroom was carpeted, that he could see little lumps, little bumps all over the room, and he was absolutely convinced there were mines planted under his living room, his bedroom rug. This is like 2005, and he knew damn well that the Viet Cong couldn't have mined his bedroom in Pleasanton, California in the mid-2000s. But again, like I said, the logic of that was completely trumped and defeated by the emotional power of the dream. So this poor guy sat there with his legs over the side of the bed, not touching the floor, with his bladder bursting, and he sat there till dawn for 3 hours until the daylight, you know, was such that he could finally look and see there weren't any mines. But you know, this lasted for 3 hours. This stuff is incredibly powerful. And, you know, like I said, it's one of the symptoms that vets report as the most distressing.
Well, and you just said it a second ago, but logic, it has a hard time trumping your emotions. It's in all the symptoms, but in dreams it's really, really prevalent because, again, you just saw it. You just saw it, and it's real in your head for a minute, and in some cases for hours, but it's real. And so to say it's not real and to argue that with logic is very hard sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you make a great point, Joe. This is not unique. It's in all the symptoms, but it is particularly powerful with nightmares. So anyway, a couple other things that occur in and around that symptom. You know, it's very common. I'm sure you are familiar with the idea of the perimeter check that's due, you know, towards bedtime usually, and sometimes get up and do throughout the night. After a nightmare, going back to sleep is damn near impossible, and vets usually give up on going back to sleep. So perimeter checks, checking the locks, checking the windows, checking on, you know, a firearm if one has one nearby, all of that is a natural reaction to having a nightmare and the sense of threat that's been raised by the nightmare. Once in a while, vets will take it beyond the house and go out and kind of do a little bit of a patrol in the neighborhood. But again, if anybody listening is prone to doing these perimeter checks, especially after a nightmare, be aware that's not only normal but almost universal. So, I guess that's about all I have to say by way of opening remarks about them as a sort of a phenomenon. I don't know if there's anything you wanted me to add before I go on to talk briefly about what to do about them.
Well, and I've talked about this in other symptoms, but I'll say it one last time. One of the reasons PTSD is so hard to kick over time and why it doesn't go away over time is because a lot of times if it is a direct combat dream, somebody will say, hey, you haven't been in combat in 10 years. Why do you still think about it all the time? Well, I saw it last night. I saw it an hour ago when I woke up. I saw it yesterday. And again, it's not always combat related, but when it is, it wasn't 20 years ago. It wasn't 50 years ago in some guys' cases. And for the World War II vets that I've met, it's not 60 years ago, 70 years ago. It was last night. So when people say, why can't you get over it? Because I just saw it yesterday. And
well, that's a great point, Joe. And that pertains to all the intrusion symptoms. When it comes back, there's no fading of the photograph with time, not at all, not an iota. So yeah, absolutely right, Joe. It's always fresh and it's always ambushing, and until one does something decisive to go after it, it's just going to keep coming after you. That's kind of one of the main points we want to make when we're arguing why go get some therapy for this. You know, if it went away with time, well, that would be great. But not only does it not do that, but it holds the upper hand, it being the trauma memory. You know, it's always ambushing you. You never know when the hell it's going to come and get you, no matter how much you try to, you know, avoid triggers and shrink your world. So, you know, that's, I think, finally what makes vets decide to get some help. You know, they're tired of it coming after them, and they decide to go get it. So,
well, and what makes it worse is, as time goes on, you keep thinking to yourself, and again, and I'm using myself as an example, I don't know about everybody, but you feel like, God, why haven't I beaten this yet? I'm still having this dream. I'm still not able to kick its ass. And you go, good God, how weak am I? How pathetic am I? And so it adds another element of not only is the dream horrible, now I wake up and I feel horrible because I can't beat it. And that's when I wanted to get help, is when you realize I can't kill this. I can't headbutt it to death. You know, just the tough guy in me isn't enough. You also need some kind of, and I'll say medical help, but you know what I mean. You'll need some kind of actual help to get through it, because it's not, you're not able to just headbutt it until it dies like everything else in your life. You know, usually military veterans, especially combat veterans, usually we can say, hey, I'm a tough guy, I can get through anything. Well, you can't get through your own head. It's a very humbling experience.
If you could defeat it by an effort of will, you would have done so long ago. And, you know, and the way you beat it is by mustering almost the exact opposite kind of courage as opposed to the courage that you're used to mustering, you know. So to turning to others for help and expressing your feelings and going inward and all those things, not only are you not trained for that, you guys are trained to do the opposite. So it's a very, very difficult challenge. Anyway, so nightmares, like I said at the beginning, nightmares do have the ability to teach us some really important things about where we want to put our energies therapeutically when we're getting after PTS. But if they are extreme and causing so much havoc that settling into therapy is impossible, if you're so exhausted, you're sleeping through your alarm and forgetting appointments, then we do have to deal with nightmares as a problem, you know, before we look at them as sources of wisdom. So there are a bunch of medications available to help manage nightmares and to manage sleep disturbance in general. And I don't know if there's any, probably it's not useful to name them, because first of all, one person's miracle drug is a disaster for the next person. You know, psychiatry is still a very infant science, and there's so much trial and error. But you know, be aware, our listeners need to be aware, there's, you know, well over a dozen medications that directly or indirectly help promote sleep. And probably the best bet would be to go with a psychiatrist who not necessarily works at the VA, but has a lot of experience with veterans, which often means VA psychiatrists, who can help you develop the regimen and the dosage that might help get your sleep improved. Nothing is going to make somebody with severe PTSD sleep through the night, you know, like a person who hasn't been traumatized. But if someone's getting 3 horrible hours and we can get them, you know, 5 decent hours, that is a gigantic improvement. So there are a number of medications that directly or indirectly promote sleep. And then there is one specific medicine that's worth naming called Prazosin. Prazosin, which has been used with veterans who suffer from nightmares. It doesn't block nightmares per se, but what it does is block adrenaline release. As I say, when a nightmare strikes, your body reacts like the trauma is hitting again. And so there's a huge, huge cascade of chemicals, particularly adrenaline, that gets released. So Prazosin blocks adrenaline to a certain extent, and allows the person to sleep through the nightmare and go on, hopefully, to a more peaceful sleep. It was discovered, by the way, just by accident, because it's a blood pressure medicine. It was discovered by accident to help nightmares.
There's a handful.
A lot of Vietnam vets have high blood pressure, so they were taking the Prazosin for that, and lo and behold, a lot of them found their nightmares lessened. So
I was going to say there's a handful of blood pressure meds that do that same thing, because I've been trying a couple of them to find one that works, but yeah, they give out a couple different kinds.
Yeah, so if you're, you know, if somebody's being eaten alive by nightmares, I do encourage them to at least talk to their doc about Prazosin. If you're on a different blood pressure med, that dosage might need to be adjusted. The main side effect I've heard of is it does drop your blood pressure, so if you get up in the middle of the night too abruptly, you can kind of do a face plant. So you have to be careful and get up slowly, but it's pretty safe medicine. A lot of our vets have benefited from it. And then, you know, there's a try. If you're not a medicine person, if you're absolutely against it, there is one old tried and true method of dealing with of nightmares, and that is to write about it. The so-called nightmare log, and that isn't anything other than just a blank pad of paper and a pen at bedside. And this works two different ways. One is if you wake up from a nightmare, even if you can only recall fragments of it, sometimes writing down what you can remember, capturing it in language, allows you to relax enough that you can get back to sleep or at least rest a little bit more. This is kind of part of a growing body of research on the power of language to tame our fears, something we've always sort of intuitively known. But if you can put a name to something that's really frightening, it kind of takes a little bit of its power away. So the nightmare log is in that sort of tradition. The other thing you can do is if you have a recurrent nightmare that you know is likely to come and get you, Some research indicates that if you write down the dream before you go to bed in as much detail as possible, it may diminish the chance that the nightmare will come. It's kind of like giving the devil his due, you know. You face it consciously, so your unconscious doesn't have to throw it up in your face when you go to sleep. So, you know, and in the most effective way we've heard of the nightmare log being used, this is in a book by an author who's written several books on PTS. Her name is Aphrodite Matsakis, M-A-T-S-A-K-I-S. And I think this one's called it's just called PTSD, A Complete Treatment Guide. But she's got a section on the nightmare log, and she says if you wake up in the middle of the night just freaked out from a nightmare, just repeating some kind of grounding affirmation like, you know, I'm here, I'm safe, the trauma's not happening again. Saying that and then doing the writing can really calm you down a great deal. So the other thing you can do is writing down your nightmares and bringing them in and talking with your therapist about them can be helpful. Or if you're in a group, we often will have our veterans you know, write down either a trauma experience itself or a nightmare about that trauma experience as a way to start the process of healing.
She has another book, Aphrodite does, called I Can't Get Over It, A Handbook for Trauma Survivors. And that's another great handbook.
Yeah, that actually, I Can't Get Over It is probably my favorite of her books. She really understands particularly shame and guilt as issues. There's not a whole lot of authors out there who have talked about shame and guilt, especially back in the 90s when she was doing some of that work. So, yeah, I recommend that book highly. She's also got Vietnam Wives, which is an excellent book for spouses. And a lot of her points obviously pertain to spouses of Iraq, Afghanistan, and any war for that matter. So,
what we learned in group is always the same. No matter what war you're in, trauma is trauma. And we've Absolutely. Talked about that, you know, to death. But, I mean, the point remains. It's almost always the same exact things, whether it's one war or another. You know, what dirt you fought in doesn't change your trauma.
You got it. That's right.
Okay, the doctors were busy today, so we have to do this in two parts. So I went ahead and asked him to go ahead and give a preface, an idea of what we're going to do in the second part, and you guys can listen to that next.
Then let me just say something as a preface to that. In our program here, we focus a great deal on unfinished business with people involved in our traumas. In fact, it's our contention that at the core of all traumas, particularly that's human to human, like the vast majority of trauma is, whether it be war or sexual assault or some other sort of crime, the heart of all the syndrome of PTS, underlying all the observable symptoms, is some sort of unfinished business with other people who were involved in the trauma, whether it be enemy or beloved friend or stranger that you just happened upon by accident in the course of the trauma and fate threw you together. Other people are involved in our traumas. And so we're going to talk about how that particular aspect, that core feature of trauma, comes up in the form of nightmares, and therefore how nightmares can guide us toward the healing that needs to take place, what that unfinished business is, because that unfinished business is always manifested by some combination of the core emotions of grief, guilt, and shame. And then finally, we're going to talk about how nightmares can also be a tremendous marker of healing, how the way nightmares can spontaneously change into far more peaceful versions of themselves, and how that can signify that a person has done something decisive to lay to rest that unfinished business with the others involved in our traumas. So we'll cover all that next time.
Outstanding. Well, again, thank you guys both for coming on, and I will talk to you again next time.
Okay, Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate you having us. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye. One thing I wanted to add at the end of this is, if you guys haven't seen it yet, there's a TED Talk. And if you don't know what a TED Talk is, any idea worth spreading, the TED Talks go on it, and it can be about education or anything. But there's a specific TED Talk. Search it on Google, TED Talk, and it's called Andrew Solomon, Depression, The Secret We Share. And it talks about not only depression, but it gives a good idea of how mental health has changed, how we view mental health, and how it still is an infant science. People have been fixing broken arms and broken legs forever. People have been fixing, all medical, physical ailments since cavemen learned how to splint themselves. But what they haven't been doing is working on mental problems. So it's a new science. So hopefully in 100 years or 50 years, we look back at this time and we think that it was the caveman days. We think, man, now there is a medication that helps, or man, now there is a therapy that fixes it all. But the moment, we're in the infancy of the science, and so it takes a mixture of both medicine and therapy. My personal idea was what I did. I went through all the therapy with no medication, and then whatever was left at the end, I went into a doctor and actually asked to try to help with those with medication. I did not want to just numb it up. I did not want to get a happy pill that made it all over. I didn't want to just lose that part of myself, and I was very afraid of taking the medicine. But at the end of the trauma therapy, at the end of 3 years of going to intensive therapy, there were some issues that were left, and you do still need a little bit of medical help. So it's a very important thing to understand that you need both the trauma therapy and the medicine. There's no way at the moment we're just not smart enough in the science yet. We're not smart enough in the, and I say the doctor community, I'm not a doctor, but for the doctors who are working on this, they're trying to find a fix. But there is no one-size-fits-all therapy. There is no one-size-fits-all drug. There is no one-size-fits-all path to recovery. Some people are fixed in different ways. They're healed in different ways. They're made whole again in different ways. So it's a combination of all the things that you do in your life, whether that is yoga, whether that is therapy, whether that is a few medications that help you sleep better. You have to find all the ways that help and use all of them collectively. You can't think that only having one of the pieces of the puzzle will make the puzzle whole. That's just not how it works. That's not how mental science works. That's not how mental medicine works. The problem with something as large as the VA is they want a one-size-fits-all thing because they are a bureaucracy, and I don't hold that against them. They're trying very hard to find the therapy that works, but again, I can't state this enough. There is no one-size-fits-all cure to post-traumatic stress. There is no one-size-fits-all cure to depression or to substance abuse or to any of these things. Every human being is different, and so you're going to take different things, and it's going to – maybe the therapy helps you, but you still need the blood pressure meds to stay asleep. Maybe the therapy helps you, but you need – I don't know, X, Y, or Z. It doesn't matter. Everybody's different. So the point of it is I guess the short version is you have to find the fix that works for you. There's no way to cure it. There's no way to fix it that is all healing. We haven't found that yet. Hopefully one day the science will. Hopefully one day the doctors will. Hopefully one day somebody will stumble upon the cure and say, oh, now we can just make you better. But until that day comes, we are in the infancy of this science, and we have to work with all of the tools we have. So please listen to all the episodes. Please get whatever help you need. And again, guys, I really want you to listen to what they say and to find a way to make yourself post-combat normal. Find a way. Take the time to search it out. Take the time to find whatever it is you need to heal. So again, I can't wait to do the next episode, and I hope you guys get all the help you can. And when the doctor's ready, we'll do the second half of this one. I'm really excited to hear the second half. So again, have a great day, and talk to you guys later.